RadioInfluence.com, podcasting redefined. You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head. Don't believe me, just watch. This is the fabulous sports babe on RadioInfluence.com.
Hey, it's me, the fabulous sports babe. You know what? Everything's been making me crazy. College football. I got to tell you, I spent so much time watching college football that I don't think I got out of here for like 2 days. And I thought on Monday, I said, I got to get out of here or I'm going to be crazy. You know, I sort of felt like I had cabin fever, but I didn't know it because it was football and that's all I cared about. Watching a lot of that game. And I'll tell you what I was watching. I was watching Florida. And I got to be honest with you. I mean, they're a decent team and all that stuff. But I thought, oh, you're getting a brand new quarterback. It's going to be a nightmare. It wasn't the nightmare I thought it was going to be. Okay, they lost a game at LSU, but I didn't think it was all that terrible at all. Did you see any of the other games that were going on out there? Yes, Ohio State is there. By the way, I was noticing that CBS has Ohio State as number 3. I don't think so at all. They got the Baylor Bears. Who's Baylor Bear? Who the hell do they play, Rice? Come on. Come on already. I'm not over for that one. I will tell you this one. I saw the Michigan State, and I have nothing to say other than I have a friend, lifelong Michigan person, and wrote a note and just said, I saw it. I don't believe it. I don't know what happened. Did you see that thing when the touchdown goes over here and then the guy picks up the thing and he runs back and then it's over? I was like, I didn't even get any of that stuff. Did I watch the Horned Frogs? I don't know why. I kind of like that team. I don't know why, but I kind of like that team at all. I did watch a bunch of my stuff that I do all the time when it comes to the NFL. You know, and the worst part is I'm sitting there thinking, well, I'll be watching the Red Zone, which I love more than anything else in the whole wide world. And then I have to sort of watch the Bucks just because. Well, they weren't around, so I got to watch the Red Zone all day long, and the only thing I really cared about were the Patriots and the stupid Colts. I was hoping they'd run up 60 points on him. They didn't, but they got close enough to say, you guys can't come in the middle of this. And you know what I saw? Did anyone else see the Denver-Cleveland thing? I was like, I don't understand how this team is 6-0. They're not very good. But Denver keeps winning. You got to give them up to that. But at some point, it's going to collapse around them in the middle of that one. The other one, Cincinnati. I kind of like this team. I like Andy Dalton. I've always thought last year he was going to be better. He's so much better right now. I love that more than anything. Anything else that made me crazy? I did see Pittsburgh and Arizona. And I have to be honest with you, Arizona losing the first time and then going to Pittsburgh, I never thought that that would happen. It did. And some guy I never heard of, what's his name, Landry? Is that the guy that threw the football? Like, everybody else was dead. I thought they were going to call me. I had my phone open, like, saying, are they calling me to go in there and be the quarterback for Pittsburgh Steelers? I wasn't really sure. And the other one, of course, I saw was that one in which New England just looked wonderful. Did anyone watch the Giants in Philadelphia? I know it's Monday Night Football and it's all that stuff. It doesn't do a thing for me at all. I mean, if it's good, I'll watch it. But you know what? And it's the Giants in Philadelphia and I was yay Ron. I wasn't yay Ron about that one at all. We have a million things to do and very good things that are coming up. I have to tell you about it. All right, we will do a couple of things that made you think about some things, but this is even better. I'm going to talk to the person who happens to be the only football Hall of Fame person. Happens to have, I believe, carry a torch in the Olympics, if I remember that correctly. Is on the board of directors for the V Foundation, Jimmy V Foundation. First woman ever to be in Monday Night Football. And they called her the most outstanding sportscaster in the whole wide world. Obviously, they didn't talk to me. But they were obviously doing that. We're going to talk to her. She's one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. I've known her since I was a kid. Well, I hate to say, I don't really think 18 was a kid, but you get all of that. Leslie Visser coming to visit on The Babe Show next.
Just burning. Can you imagine? I was just talking to one of our mutual oldest friends about how great you are, Susan Waldman.
I love Susan Waldman. She was on a couple of weeks ago on this, and she was great about it. Yes.
And she loves you. And she loves you. So how about that?
Now, where have you been and what have you been doing anyway? I mean, now, did you have to do it for something else? Because I know you're so busy now, but are you talking to Susan or are you talking to other people?
It's been our, so we're taping this yet or not yet?
I'm always taping. It's perfectly fine. Do you want me to act like...
I don't know.
Do you want me to go?
I don't know how on the record, off the record. Well, I guess it's the same with you. But you know what? I've really, really had a hard day. I've had to do a lot of radio shows because, as you know, I go so far back with Rick Pitino. Oh, yeah. And, you know, and Susan Waldman and I were talking about this, that, you know, there are some people... Like, maybe you're this way with Tino Martinez or Joe Madden or some people. You know, there are some people that you've known them so long and so well, and you really, in your heart, know, you think you know what happened. And I really, in my gut, believe that Rick Pitino did not know about this. I really, in my gut, believe that.
I think it was Pat Ford from Yahoo who said, I don't think he knew anything about this at all.
I really don't think he did. Now, you know, that's a separate issue from should he have known, but I do not think he did know. I really, really, because you've known Rick long, too. You know, I go back to 1977 with Rick. I covered all seven of his final fours. I've known the guy well at every stop, and I think he would have been horrified. I really do, especially as you know, he lost, you know, his best friend in the world was Billy Minardi. This was going on in Billy Minardi Hall. He lost his brother-in-law in 9/11. I really think he would have been, I do believe he would have been horrified.
Let me go back to this. Are they making you crazy that you don't want to talk to me today? I'm just making sure of that. Have you just had enough of it today and want to do it a different time?
No, I love you. Okay. You and I go back 40 years.
All right. Well, that's what I wanted to know, because if they've been calling you and asking you all this, I just wanted to make sure about that. You know, I would imagine that. Did they go after you and say, but you've known him since BU, you've known him all that time, and yet you go back with him all those years? I feel the same way, but I don't know if it's because I really like him.
Yeah, yes, that's really a fair point. I think the most fair point that people can bring up is really, truly, you know, knock me dead. In my gut, I don't believe he knew about it. Then the fair question is, should he have known about it? You know? So I get that people can accept that that's really how I feel, that he did not know. That's really how I feel, that he did not know. So then, you know, should he have known? And maybe let's kick that around. I don't know that. I mean, can the head of the psychology department know every professor under him? I mean, does John Skipper at ESPN have to know everything everybody is doing? I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, I feel the same way. And I also think if it's done inside a room, other people were involved in it, it doesn't mean that he knows it. But I wonder if this comes from the woman situation into this now. People say, is it all over for him? And I'm like thinking, well, I don't really want that to happen for him, but I go back to the same thing about knowing him for a long time.
Yeah, no, I really, well, see, this is how I feel. I think the president of the university, right, it's a university decision, and this is my gut, the president of the university sits there, Ramsey, with his board or his lawyers, and I think, this is not just because I love Rick Pitino, but I believe this, that Rick Pitino brought glory to this university. Glory. I mean, University of Louisville, you know, they're not normally ranked with Stanford or Duke, or my husband, as you know, went to Harvard. They're not normally ranked with that. But Rick Pitino brought glory to this university, and I believe President Ramsey should stand with Rick Pitino. That's what I really think, that he did not know. And if you say, well, should he have known? To me, that gets back to, really, can you know every minute of, you know, of people that you work with or for? I mean, can you really know 24 hours a day what they're doing? That's how I feel about it.
You know, Leslie, it's one of the things, I mean, if we go to Twitter and think about Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff that's going on, I mean, that really didn't even happen 10 years ago, and yet it's everything, and everything, it seems like, If I read somebody in the newspaper, they have to go to Twitter and then do Facebook and then they write for their paper for tomorrow, it seems. And so everything has to be on there, and it's constantly what you, I mean, everybody said like Joe Biden was running yesterday. He's absolutely running and today's not, you know, but everybody was saying, yeah, you know, so it changes like that. And I wonder if, because we're in this kind of social all the time, you know, it's a good thing I wasn't there doing this a long time ago, because I probably would have killed somebody. You know, so maybe it's better. Do you know what I mean? Now it's better that I just do this and they don't have to make me crazy. But I think if this was in the 80s and you had to listen to these idiots all the time. But like everybody, I mean, the Joe Biden thing is a perfect example where he said, I'm definitely doing it yesterday, or they said he was, and then he changes his mind. And I'm thinking, it doesn't even matter that somebody said it and they go, oh, no, he's changing his mind now. But they don't really care that what they said yesterday made a big difference. They don't care about yesterday.
Yeah, it's an excellent point that the world we live in now is momentary. And, you know, I mean, you listen to Donald Trump and, you know, he can say some really ridiculous things and the numbers go up. And then you say, well, you know, what is he really saying? Like, what really are his positions? Well, his positions are bomb ISIS and build a wall, right? And no, you know, sort of no backing. How am I going to do this? How is this going to happen? So you're right. We live in this really astonishing world of so different from when we started, where, you know, you had sources and you had to confirm things. And I mean, I had the privilege of starting at the Boston Globe, where the people were to this day the best at what they did. It was Bud Collins on tennis. It was Peter Gammons on baseball, Will McDonough on football, Bob Ryan on basketball. So the world I came from was that you just didn't throw something out there. Mm-hmm. You really had to make sure, and you're a Bostonian. I mean, you know what we hate more than anything, and Susan Waldman and I talk about this, we hate frauds. That's what we hate.
Frauds.
We hate people who just throw it out there.
You know, I was thinking about that because I thought, when you were there and you were just beginning when you left Boston College and you went to the Globe, and I'm thinking to myself, first of all, that was when they had an interview room where you'd sit down and you'd get like the backup safety, and you had to, for you, you had to get the quarterback, but they wanted to give you, remember before we had the interview room? Cause now people go in and they just think that it's normal to go into the locker room. And I'm thinking, it really wasn't that long ago where I had to sit outside in some place called some, you know, safety I never heard of. I got to talk to them. But for you, at least, you know, it was worse for you because you were the beat reporter for the Patriots then.
Yeah, it was a laugh. They would have me in the weight room, which I used to call the WAIT room until the third string tight end came out. But you know what's amazing? I look back on those years and my passion outweighed the hurdles. And I remember it was so amazing because I, you know, the Globe made me the first woman to cover the NFL as a beat. And the black players were so great to me because they used to say, I know what it's like to be the only one. And
they gave me the exact same
thing. I just remember it was like Leon Gray. Mm-hmm. That was Sam Bam Cunningham. Of course, years later, people knew Randall so well, but his brother was a great Patriot running back. And, you know, I just remember that I thought, okay, if this is the price, you know, if the price I have to pay is chasing Terry Bradshaw around in the parking lot to get a quote, you know, that's kind of okay, you know? I'm not in Somalia begging for food.
You know, one time I was doing something and I talked to the coach when I was leaving. He was outside in the parking lot, which I thought was odd. And I went back home and I thought, I don't know what to do with this. So I picked up a writer and I called him and I said, I think he just got fired. And he said, are you sure? And I said, I had a conversation. I think this guy just got fired just now. And because I didn't know how else to say it, I went back to the writer and said, you have to do it in that way. I was talking with Christine Brennan, and she said to me, and I sort of think you're the same thing. She said, in the end, I'm a writer, no matter how much TV, radio, whatever you do. But you're a writer, and that's where it starts for you.
Yes, to this day, and I was really privileged to get elected to the Sports Writers Hall of Fame. And you know what I said? It's so funny. Chris Brennan, of course, one of our best friends, one of my oldest best friends. Mm-hmm. And I used to say this to people, that my greatest fear was, I know I'm a good reporter and I know I'm a good writer. And my greatest fear in life was that Christine Brennan would out-report me and Sally Jenkins would outwrite me.
That's funny. That is.
Yeah. I mean, I really, when I got to TV, I swear I never felt in TV. I mean, maybe people have better TV skills, but my fears in TV never were that somebody could out-report me. And I knew I had a vocabulary, you know, those years at the Globe, 10 years at the Globe. But that's what I used to say. My fear was that Chris Brennan would out-report me and Sally would outwrite me. I come from a print background. I am a print background.
And I think that's one of the things you had to get into. What about the fact that when you go back to there and you said McDonough was there and that Bob Ryan was there and that everybody was there, and then they put this woman in the middle of that? What did they do? I mean, was there a lot of talk about we're going to put this woman in the middle of this back in the Globe days?
Do you know what I did? I think I did two things. And you must have done this too. I mean, both of us have lasted for 40 years. I think I did two things that helped me. Number one, I had a sense of humor rather than indignation. Mm-hmm. You know, I would roll with it when, you know, now women run and they have lawsuits and whatever. But at the time, I the first thing Chuck Fairbanks ever said to me was, "You ought to go to lunch with my daughter. You're about the same age." Mm-hmm. I mean, here I was the beat writer, right? So, but I think, and the other thing was, I used to play pickup basketball with all those guys. So I made myself into kind of one of the guys. You know, I think that helped me. I think because those people were such giants, you know, they really were giants. I mean, it wasn't like I started at some small paper in Dubuque. I went to the paper that had been voted number one in the country 10 straight years. And since Sports Illustrated named that sports section the greatest of all time. So I knew I was walking among giants, and I learned a couple things. One, I mean, it was the original PTI. Kornheiser was that age, but Wilbon was not. But, you know, the original PTI was Gammons and Ryan going at it every day in the office. That was the original. So I learned that you didn't take the floor unless you had something either funny or informative. Otherwise, you just listened.
You know, I want to ask you this. You're running in Central Park, and then what happens?
I'm pulling him out of nowhere, but
you should talk about it.
You know, Randy Moss used to say he never went to any offensive meetings, and he would just say to Dante Culpepper, "Just throw it up, dog."
Right.
So, you and I have known each other long enough, just throw it up, dog. Mm-hmm. I was not a good runner, but I was a committed runner. I'm 62 now. I was maybe 32 then. And I used to run, a lot of people did that loop in Central Park. It's like a 6-mile loop. And I was committed to it 4 or 5 times a week. I wasn't, you know, great or fast or anything, but I did it. And for everyone who knows New York, I was over by the Sheet Meadow where Tavern on the Green used to be. Mm-hmm. And I tripped on a tree root and my knee hit the pavement and drove my hip out the back. And, you know, this was before cell phones, or it was really just like a car crash where your knee would hit the dashboard and drive your hip. My hip went out, my acetabulum shattered it. And a kid recognized me and he left Central Park and he called an ambulance. I got the kid tickets to the Final Four for like the next 20 years.
Yeah.
And, I did. And the kid, a young man, you know, so the ambulance came and I was really out of it because I had skin on my face on the pavement and my hip was sticking out of my body. They took me to Lenox Hill and the doctor I had was, so they called the jet doctor, mm-hmm. Steve Nicholas, whose father had been JFK's doctor, James Nicholas. He really is considered like the founder of orthopedic surgery. but he had been JFK, one of JFK's, because he knew, what was it that JFK had? Remember, he needed steroids for it. What the heck was it?
The back for him?
What was it?
Was it the back? Was that the problem for him?
No, no, no. There was something that JFK ended up on steroids. This was before people really knew about steroids, but this James Nicholas had known about it. Gosh, what the heck was the name of it? Well, we'll talk about it later. But yeah, besides his back, he had some deficiency, and Jim Nicholas knew about it and was a young doctor. Well, anyway, his son is the head of orthopedic surgery now for 35 years at Lenox Hill. But he was a kid then. But, yeah, he put my hip back together. And at the time, I had to lay in a bed for 8 weeks. Can you imagine me?
Ooh.
8 weeks. I know. The only good thing was I was the love object at the time of Don Imus. So he would call me, you know, every day in the hospital. And then he wrote me a letter, the great Don Imus. He wrote me a letter, and it said, "Dear Leslie, this is to officially inform you I am no longer in love with you. In fact, you bore me."
I can't help but laugh at that.
I wish I framed it. I wish I framed it. In fact, you bore me.
Yes. You know, but all of it's funny. Steve Nicholas is the guy who did my first knee operation when I was there.
I believe it. See, because sports people gravitated toward him. Great doctor. Genius surgeon. Genius.
You know, you're doing this thing that's it's called We Need to Talk, and it's on CBS. I got to tell you, I tried it twice, and I couldn't find it one day. And so I gave up on it, and I didn't look at it. Tell me what's been going on that I haven't been watching.
I'll tell you how great it is. I mean, I was going to rewire, whatever we do when, I don't know, we get to be this age. And Les Moonves, our genius CEO of CBS, said, no, you can't. Because everybody talks about this, but we're going to do it. CBS actually, I mean, it's a big vehicle to create a show, which he did, and Sean McManus, our chairman of CBS Sports, we're going to create a show that's all women talking about sports. And, you know, everyone says, like, you know, ESPN, I go to weddings, they say, oh, we could have done that, NBC, we could have, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. CBS did it. CBS did it. And what it is they handpick the women, and they're fantastic. It's Dana Jacobson, Lisa Leslie, Layla Ali, daughter of the great Dara Torres, myself, Andrea Kramer, Amy Trask, who was the highest-ranking woman in the NFL. She actually did all the contracts for the Oakland Raiders for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was the CEO of the Oakland Raiders. So CBS, they actually handpicked these women, and we do. We talk ball. We talk ball. It's a legitimate show. Tracy Wolfson hosts it sometimes. Dana does. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really good. And Susan Waldman was on it to talk baseball playoffs. We have a woman, Katrina Adams. She's the president of the USTA. So, you know, it's Tuesday nights, and it's on the CBS cable. We finally have a cable. Right. We never had a cable partner or a cable show. Mm-hmm. So it's CBS SN. But, you know, it is. I mean, we kick around. Can the Patriots go undefeated? By the way, do you think they can?
You know what? Somebody said it's up to the Jets, and I thought the Jets are coming to New England. They're going to kill them. Yes, I do think they can. I think you could also kind of lose out. But I think that, and I'm 100% behind Brady. I don't care. They could be 1-10 and I'd be going to the best team in the world. I don't care because I love them that much. But you know what? I think they can go 16-0 because I think they want to stick it right up Goodell's ass. I really do.
You know, I just think they're a great, he's such a genius coach. The only thing is it's been done once. The great, by the way, can you imagine this? I live about 30 seconds from Don Shula. And, I think I got to do maybe the last interview he'll be able to do. He's 86. Mm-hmm. And I went over to his house and, you know, it took a while to get a decent interview with him. You know, you had to take breaks. Sure. But I don't know. I mean, why is it that it happened once in 1972 and hasn't happened since? It's really, really hard. But I agree. I actually think the Patriots, I don't know, all the way through the Super Bowl, but it's so much to ask, but I kind of do think they can do it.
And I really think that there's something to be said, and they just, it's like when they went to the Colts, and I was like, I hope they run up 60 points, and they didn't do that, but, you know, in case anybody's, you know, they handled that very well. I mean, you can say whatever they thought, but they got it done, and once again, they go through it, and they do it, and I'm all for it, and I'm the only person in the world. I think if you're like me, like you, Susan, because we're from Boston, we believe in it, but everybody else in the world thinks it's horrible, and they cheated and all that, and I don't really care.
Well, you know what's funny is all these shows, talk shows I've been on, and they're all saying, okay, the Mets, you know, okay, it's over. It's totally over. And I said, yes, you know, it probably is, but really saying you're down 3-0 to a Red Sox fan, you know, really? You know, I don't want to quote Tug McGraw, you got to believe, but just don't say it can't possibly happen. Is it likely to happen? No, but really, don't say it to a Red Sox fan.
You know, one of the things about that, I think, is that I just lived through the life that it never happened in my father's lifetime. It never happened in my grandmother's lifetime. And they were just diehard Red Sox fans forever. And it just, for me, I just assumed it would never happen. And then it happened, and then it happened again. You know, and it was like, you know, you're sort of like, you just sort of give it up kind of thing. And then you just say, okay, this is my, it's kind of like being Cubs fans, you know, like it's just the way it is in our life.
Like that.
And now it's like they had two of them. Go ahead.
I'll tell you what happened with me. I can remember in 2003, my former husband, the great Dick Stockton, we lived in New York. And I can remember when Boone off Wakefield, and that was it for me. I wailed like I lost my dog.
Yeah.
I said, that's it. Like, I mean, I grew up like you, listening, you know, to Red Sox games on cheap transistors with Kirk Gowdy. I mean, you know, I would walk home from Fenway. I ate Fenway Franks from the time I was six. And when Boone off Wakefield, I said, that's it. I just can't stand it anymore. I can't stand it. So for the next year, for them really to come back, it's why sports is so great. It's why I love sports, because it doesn't matter how rich the athletes are or where their mother went to college. It just doesn't matter. We were down 3-0 and we came back and beat them.
Yeah, and that's all that really mattered. And I was sort of like, you know, it's funny because you lived in New York and I lived in New York right around, and it was right around the time when the Yanks started doing well, like in 96, and then they won all of those games. And I was right in New York, and I had to be honest with you. I said, yes, I'm a Red Sox fan, but I'm into the Yanks right now. In that they were, and everybody was there, and they're going to the Kenyan Heroes, and it was so great. I mean, I thought it, I wasn't sitting at home going, oh, I hate it, but I thought it was great. But then when the Red Sox won, and then they kept winning again, I went, it happened in my lifetime. I just kept saying that over and over. It kept happening.
Yeah, now see, I had a different approach because I can remember walking down Park Avenue and someone was coming toward me and had a T-shirt that said, congratulations, Red Sox World Champion 2004. And I really got puffed up because, you know, living in New York was hard when those Yankees were so fabulous. Mm-hmm. And I remember the person was coming toward me with the T-shirt, and I got all puffed up. It was a beautiful day walking down Park Avenue, and I turned around, and on the back of the T-shirt were all 26 Yankee titles. And I yelled out, I didn't care who recognized me, who saw me, I yelled out, that's why we hate you!
That's right. You frauds, all of you in that.
I mean, after that, the Red Sox fans got a little goofy, you know, we got a little goofy, but I just thought that was so magical. I just thought it was so magical when they won it, and it told me that sports—that's what sports is. I mean, sports is the Red Sox or the, you know, the Patriots are going undefeated, and then Tyree makes the most ridiculous catch, you know, and Rodney didn't knock it away, and it just—I don't know. I think it's what's great about sports. It's why I can leave my job, maybe, but I can't leave sports.
That's how I feel about this. I took like about 5 years off, and it was just inside of me. And I sometimes if I talk to people in radio, they kind of get it, but it was just inside of me. And I used to float in the pool, and the people would go, could you go to work? We're tired of you floating in the pool. And I just had it inside of me that I had to do it again. And this place is great. I walk around in boxer shorts and a t-shirt. I don't have, I don't even have shoes on. This is like teen heaven where I am right now. I just do
gonna,
nothing.
You know what? I'm going to call you back to figure out how you do this because
you sit at home and you do nothing. You do a couple of things you figure out, and then you just figure it out, but you only have to do it once a week. This is really good. You only have to do it once a week.
Yeah, this is excellent, and we talk, and maybe I'm going to have to be your junior partner because I can't slot. Flying kills me. I had two speaking engagements over the last couple of years. One was in Doha, Qatar, and one was in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. They paid great, very interesting places, but the flights, my God, they're more than 20 hours. And I just said, you know, I can't do that anymore. I can't.
I think you need like Ambien or Ativan or something like that so you can just go to sleep and they wake you up when it's time to get there. It's nice that you got there, but I think it's great that you went to those places anyway.
Oh, I tried all those things. But you know what's interesting is in both countries, well, in Doha, Qatar, the day before I left, Paul Tagliabue, who used to be the commissioner, as you know, of the NFL, he called me and said, Leslie, I heard you're going to Doha. While you're there, would you speak at Georgetown? Like, who would think that Georgetown would have a campus in Doha, Qatar? And the same thing in Abu Dhabi. There is a $5 billion NYU campus. So you know what? The world is so much bigger than we think. It's so much bigger than we think. So, you know, I'm glad that this job has taken me all over the world and everything, but I just want to be your junior partner on your podcast. Can I do that?
You absolutely. You know what I remember? I got to remember this. I must have been, I mean, I think my first job was at RKO, and I think that's when I met you at a tennis match. And all I knew is she was writing for the Globe, and I was hanging out with her for those 2 days, whatever it was. That's all I was going to do. And that's
Didn't
the first
laugh?
Time I ever. Yes, but it was someplace in the Boston Garden or someplace like that. But I remember that. And that was the first time I ever met you, a long time ago.
God, 40 years ago. Well, I went to see Bud Collins. I had to speak in Boston just a couple weeks ago. You know, and Bud's really struggling. I mean, Bud Collins, right? Like, I used to go to Wimbledon and say, I'm Leslie Visser from the Boston Globe. I know Bud Collins. And they'd say, oh, well, who do you need? Seriously. Like, do you need Martina? Do you need Jan Tyriak? Do you need Nastasi? What do you need? And, you know, now he's really, really not sure where he is, you know, strange, very strange, because he taught America tennis. So I don't know. I think the trick is, and you know this too, I think we have had billion-dollar lives. Not that we earn $1 billion, but just think of all the games you've seen and places you've been. I believe we've had billion-dollar lives, and no one can ever take that from us. You know, we were around the funniest people doing the greatest thing. So I have such gratitude for having had a life in sports.
Let me ask you about Tiger Woods. I think he's done. Is he done?
Am I done?
No, you, Tiger Woods. Hello.
Oh, is Tiger Woods done?
God, this is worse than before. Go on.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that somebody said it, obviously with Tiger's approval, that didn't somebody recently say he can see the sunset, or wasn't there some quote there that Tiger never, whoever said it, had to have Tiger's approval? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Tiger sees Jordan Spieth and Jason Day, Rory, I think he sees the young ones. And he sees, hell, I used to be like that. Mm-hmm. Tiger is not done, but I do not think he will catch Jack. That's sort of my take on it.
You know, I think that somebody,
what's yours?
Jordan is pretty good, but what I think is, when we watched him 15 years ago, I'm thinking he's really only 25 now, so he was only 10 then. So it wasn't, oh, my God, I'm so afraid of Tiger, the way it was in 2000, where everybody's
right.
I just can't do that. And now they're like, yeah, but I was 10, and I still know how to play now. And so I see it as these guys that are going up, whether it's, you know, Fowler, whoever it is. And I think it's kind of interesting, because although we lived in that 90s and in the 20s, of what happened there and how well he did. And everybody was just scared to death that now these new people really don't. They know who he is without a doubt, but they can play and they don't care.
Yeah, no, there, and I remember, I actually was at Pebble Beach in 2000 when Tiger just, you know, tore up the field and people were terrified of him. But, I just think Tiger's an elder statesman. He'll win a lot. He'll have to, I think, come to terms. He may not catch Jack, but he's one of the three greatest in the history of the world. And that's pretty good place to be. And I suppose, you know, I don't even think you get to be one of the 10 greatest in the world unless you are really, I mean, just look how long you've been at it, babe, how many people you know, how many people love you. Like, you know, if you didn't do it with grace and knowledge, you wouldn't be where you are.
Well, I don't know that grace and knowledge had anything to do with me. I got to tell you that.
Yeah. You know, I think you do have that. Well, and you had humor. See, people in Boston.
You had to have the humor or else.
Yeah, humor. We had humor.
Without a doubt. Where are you right now, Leslie? Where are you? Can you sit where you are right now?
I want to talk to you off the road. I want to talk to you when we hang up and do this. I'm in a strange place because I've only worked three places in my life and they all, you know, were A-plus places. I worked at the Boston Globe, then I went to CBS, then I went to ABC. And I'm really ready not to have quite so much pressure. You know, I felt that for the last 40 years, every word is measured, every appearance is measured. And I think I've got 10 years left in me to do, I don't know. I remember, and maybe you'll tell me this, John Madden told me, once you do radio, you'll think it's the greatest thing that ever happened. Is radio that great?
I don't know how great it is. I mean, it is when I look at it, but the fact is I like doing radio. But do I have to go to work every day, 5 days a week? No, I don't have to do that anymore.
Right.
I've done everything that I have to do. And, you know, I have to be honest with you. For me, there was a long time when I took, after the cancer and all that, I really needed to take 5 years off. And then I really wanted to be behind. And then I got used to the fact that, you know what? I did do that. I was the first woman. I did the things that I had to do, which it took me a long time to realize I've done it now. Because I kept thinking, you really were the first person that ever did a national radio show. You really were the first person. You know what I mean? All those things. But it's taken me a long time to realize I've done all that and I don't have to do it anymore because I did it.
But what gives you pleasure now? See, like for me now, what gives me pleasure for me, I just did this 3-part series on the Dolphins. And it was so much fun because it was the Dolphins, you know, in the early, you know, the glory days, you know, they went to 3 straight Super Bowls, right? They won back to back. One of them was a perfect season. And it was so much fun, really, for me to talk to Bob Greasy and Mercury Morris and, you know, just people. And then, you know, the now it's fallen off the rails, although they won the one game. But basically the Dolphins, you know, basically for 10 years have been nothing. But I do know that I still love to hear people's stories of how they got there, you know, how they achieved. But I do know this. Networks, because money is so precious, networks don't do features anymore. They do studio shows. That's what they do because it's cheap, right? Just get everybody in there. It's cheap to do studio shows. So I would say, I don't know, maybe I'll go back to writing because, you know, you get, it's a little bit longer form. They're more like features. But it seems to me that you landed on the butterfly wings, as Parcells used to say, that radio or podcast or however this goes, that's really where people just talk. And, you know, it seems to me to be the place where you can have conversations and have opinions, and then you're done.
Well, you know, you're talking about that. And for me, at first, I was like, well, do you do it? Like, I don't sit here and go, we're talking to Leslie Visser from CBS. Do you know what I mean? I'm talking to Leslie and that's it. And you better. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't have to do that from, you know, on sports radio, whatever it is. I don't have to do it in that way. And it took me a little while to understand that you and I can have this conversation and it doesn't really matter. And it's sort of the kind of things that if you look on our iTunes and you see what it is, and a lot of times people will get it and maybe they won't do it until they, you know, they might have it for 2 days before they run it on their cell phone or whatever they're going to do when they're running at the gym or whatever's going on. And so it's a different way of doing it, but it seems like the way people want to do it now. So am I hip now? I guess I don't know. Maybe I'm hip. I don't know that yet. I haven't figured that out, but
are.
I think that
you're ahead of the curve.
Yes.
Because here's what it is. The best thing in life is, if you're just talking to a person like you and I would talk and like we do and have a telephone conversation, only now it's your podcast. But that is like, that's what people want real. You know, that's why we hate Boston Frauds. People want real. And so that is real. I mean, it's real for me to tell you my gut feeling about Patino. And it's your gut feeling to say you came through the cancer and this was, they took 5 years off because you needed it. And then you came back to it. But I do think that's where it's headed, right? It's just, let's just have some real conversations.
And I think there are a lot of people that are doing it politics wise, and a lot of people are doing like 1, 2, and 3 hour shows, which I can't even imagine doing that anymore, but they do it and I understand it and they do it every day, but it's not really the thing for me. So I thought it seems like, I don't know. I sit down and he says, all right, you're going to do this. I said, all right, I'm talking to Leslie. And more importantly, I get to talk to whoever I want to, which is really, he's like, do you want to do this? And I go, of course I want to do that. But it, you know, I just want to talk to the people I want to talk to. And it's about me. And that's all I care about, Leslie. It's about
okay,
me.
Let me ask you this. Is Joe Madden as cool as I think he is?
He's more cool than you can believe.
I would
love to see him and kiss him again. You know, I just want him to hug me and kiss me on my cheek because he's so wonderful, and he's all of those things, and the fact that he's there. You know, it was funny. I was talking about this a couple of weeks ago about, I don't know, but I don't think the people here are mad that Joe Madden went to the Cubs. I think that they understood what happened, and we love you, and of course, you're great. They, you know, it's like, it happened here, goodbye, he's doing that, but I think people are like, so, and you know, the Cubs weren't supposed to be this good, but they are, and good for you, it's over, and it's done, and it's fine, but I just think he is just the best guy ever.
Yeah. I don't think they begrudge him at all. I think he gave his soul to that place and he got there, but nobody went. And right. I really do believe people in Florida and in Tampa are rooting for him. Okay, it's probably going to end. I shouldn't say that as a Red Sox fan, but it probably is. But I don't know Joe Madden at all. I mean, how do you do Joe Madden? How do you do? But he's the coolest, right? He's the coolest.
He is. I like him and the whole thing with the wine and all that kind of stuff and his wife and all that stuff and going back and forth. I mean, I just like him. He used to ride his bike to work. I'm sure he does in Philly. I mean, in Chicago, but he used to ride his bike to work here.
Oh,
you got to love him. You know,
you gotta love him. I just think he's so, I don't know him at all. And I just say, oh my God, Joe Madden. And I don't know if you know this, but Tino Martinez came to our wedding. He's one of my husband's best friends. We love, love Tino Martinez.
I love Martinez. I love him.
We love him, don't we?
Well, I love him. One time I was in a flight and I got in early and I'm sitting down and I'm reading and I'm looking at a magazine. I'm waiting for the flight to take off and this thing comes around me. This man jumps on top of me and gives me kisses and stuff. And I look up and it's Tino. We're going to Las Vegas and
God.
I guess he's ready to go to Vegas.
Tino Martinez.
He's the best.
Oh,
I love him the most.
The best.
Yeah.
How about this? I cannot stand that song. Feliz Navidad. I hate that.
Oh, yes.
I start singing it now.
Right.
So every year, my husband, I've been married a long time now. I send him, every year, you know, if you go to a Spanish store, they have that Christmas card, you know, you open it up. And all I do is I write on it, I hate this song. I mail it to Dino.
And there. Yeah, you know, he's it's really good that he's been there because I like him so much. And I always wonder what he's going to do. Do you like being where you are? Do you like being on the West Coast or the East Coast? Because I was, you know, I was thinking to myself the other day, I thought I liked it when I was in the West Coast, but I guess I am an Eastern person because I'm still here. And I was on the West Coast a lot, and I was out there for 4 or 5 years, and I thought it was great, but I ended up back in the East Coast again.
No, I'm, my husband and I go through this. He's originally from Columbus, Ohio. As you know, I'm a native Bostonian. I probably would not live in Florida. I would, you know, I don't want to live in New York anymore. I lived there for 20 years, but I would live in Boston, the Cape, or, maybe DC, Florida. Miami is a fascinating town. It's a real, what is it? You know, whatever, you know what it is. It's South Beach. It's just not me. It's not me. So I wouldn't pick Florida, but my husband is fascinating. Way to get to know my husband. You got to have him on the next time. Okay. This is the guy I married. First of all, Dick Stockton was fabulous. I mean, I have no complaints. Yes. We got along great. We just ran out of gas. Sure. Great guy though. But so now I married this incredible man, Bob Canoes. I mean, the guy was in the CIA for 11 years. He's a fascinating person. I can't wait till you get to know him better. And he had just, he lived on a boat. He moved down here. He lived on his boat, and he and Patino became great friends through golf. And, so this is why I live down here in Bell Harbor, Florida, a little north of Miami. But it's, you know, he's from Columbus. It's not really his world either. It's just that the golf course is near here, and here's where we are. Fortunately, we travel enough. But I don't know. Like, if you could retire anywhere, where would it be?
Sometimes I'm here, and I'm looking out of the water, and I think to myself, I don't want to be here for the rest of my life. But I kind of want to spend a lot of time in Europe at some point.
Yeah, like if I could pick, like, you know, let's say unlimited wealth, I would live in Mayfair in London. That would be mine. Like, that's where I would live. I'd go to the theater. I follow Arsenal, the soccer team, so I could go there. So I don't know. But Florida, to me, especially, we're northern people, New England people. It's very hot here. It's very tropical.
No kidding.
Very tropical. Yeah,
and it's probably, I think it's a little bit cooler over there on the Miami side than it is over here. But it, I have to go through it. Well, that's why I try and go to the Cape for the summer, at least for a couple of months. You know,
and you know what we don't have here? Like, I mean, I'm sorry, the Marlins. I love David Sampson. David Sampson did for me. You know, some people do something for your life that is the greatest thing in your life. When they had interleague play, the Red Sox came down, and I threw out a first pitch. So I got to throw out a first pitch at a Red Sox game. So, I mean, but the Marlins are lousy. The Dolphins are lousy. You know, we're so spoiled, right? Celtics, Patriots, Bruins.
And I think the Celtics are a kind of thing. Like, I saw them the other day, like last year, I think it was, or the year before. And I thought to myself, we're so used to these people. And one day I was looking through it, and I'm going, who are these guys that are playing on the
Celtics?
Yeah,
who are they? I know now.
And we kind of go back to that magic, and we go back to Larry, and that's sort of where we kind of get lost in that, I think. I do anyway.
Well, a little bit, for me, goes back a little farther. For 50 years now, and my family moved a lot when I was young. We lived in Maryland. We lived in Ohio. For 50 years, I have gone as Sam Jones on Halloween. Like other little girls will go as Mary Poppins. Really, I would have my 24 Celtic shirt. We lived in Ohio, and I would go as Sam Jones. And Sam, every year, says, please, please don't wear that outfit anymore, but I don't care. I dress up as Sam Jones. I got my high-cut cons. Of course, I couldn't afford them at the time. Right. But I have now, and Sam has sent me a couple of his game jerseys, you know, to Leslie, Sam Jones. But, you know, we were so blessed to think that we had Ted Williams, Bobby Orr, Sam Jones, Bill Russell. Are you kidding me?
You know what I was thinking about? I was just thinking about your brother. Where's Chris?
He does a wonderful thing. I'm going to see him in 2 weeks. He runs. Oh, thank you for asking. My brother is.
I haven't seen him in a long time. I've seen him several years ago, but I haven't seen him in a while. And I just thought about him.
Thank you for asking. He's sort of the giant among all of us. He runs football games for wounded warriors, amputees from Iraq and Afghanistan against NFL alumni. So he's coming down here. He's playing Dolphin alumni. I think Shula's coaching one team. So that's what he does. He goes all around the country and wounded veterans from Afghanistan and Iraq play NFL alumni. It's really cool. Yeah, it's really beautiful.
I'm glad that he's doing that. Go ahead. But I just thought about
it. I'll tell him you asked for him.
Yeah, I was thinking. Really, I was just thinking about that. And, you know, you mentioned the thing with Shula. It was hard to talk to him for a while. Is that what it was about when you had to talk to him?
Because yes, I think he has, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. I think, you know, he can, he's got such pride, right? I mean, he was Don Shula, right? He's the Mount Rushmore. But I think he can access the older games. Like, he can remember the very first play of the Miami Dolphins. This was even before Shula was the coach. People don't remember. Shula was the coach of the Colts with Johnny Unitas, and they lost to the Joe Namath Jets. That's why Shula, his relationship with Carol Rosenblum fell apart, and he came to the Dolphins. But the Dolphins' very first play from scrimmage, a guy named Joe Auer returned the kickoff for a touchdown, 95 yards for a touchdown. So, for me, I used to be afraid of Don Shula. Like, I don't know about you, but, God, 40 years ago when I first met Don Shula, I was afraid of him. I was terrified of him. And now he's, like, kind of cuddly. Yeah. Or maybe I've known him so long. But that's the reason most people don't know that Joe Robbie, who, of course, owned the Dolphins, he first offered the job to Bear Bryant. That was the first person he offered the job to. Bear Bryant said he couldn't do it, and then he went to Don Shula.
I guess he came out all right for Don Shula and the rest of those football teams.
I guess he did. They went to, most people don't know, they went to 3 straight Super Bowls. You know, people forget. They went to the Super Bowl, they lost, I think, to the Cowboys, and they had the perfect season. Then the next year they beat the Redskins. Is that how it went? But people forget, 3 straight Super Bowls. My God.
But the Dolphins are different now. We'll have to see what's going to happen there. What about you're on the board of the V Foundation, the Jimmy V Foundation, and you've done that for a while. You've done it for like a long time, right?
Yeah, 22 years. Well, since Jimmy died.
Mm-hmm.
93, is that when we lost him? 93, I think. He died so young. He was only 43. And I had the privilege. I covered every one of his games on the way to the title. And the only blowout was Utah. The rest were overtime against Pepperdine, close against Virginia. You know, of course, I remember being at the Pit in Albuquerque, and everybody thought the semifinal, which was Louisville and Houston, everyone thought, oh, my God, this is what basketball in the 2000s is going to look like. Mm-hmm. And then, for them to beat Houston, and it was really, Derek Wittenberg claims it was a pass. Of course, it was an air ball, but he claims it was a pass that Thurl Bailey slammed through, and he was then Hakeem. He had an H, Hakeem Olajuwon. He just was afraid of fouling. That's why he didn't, or goaltending. Maybe he was afraid of goaltending. But for whatever reason, he let Thurl alone. And that's why NC State won the title. And, you know, that was so much fun, those final 4 years, because the year before had been Jordan. Remember, with the 13 seconds left and Freddie Brown turned the ball over. So it was Jordan's shot in 82, then it was NC State in 83, then it was the mighty Georgetown in 84. And then to me, when people ask me why I do what I do after 40 years, I say Villanova 66, Georgetown 64, because Villanova played a perfect game to beat Secretariat. Mm-hmm. So that was really a fun time in the NCAA.
That was good during that time. So you're having an okay time, and I think I was glad that I got a chance to talk to you today. It's, you know, I loved sitting around talking to you, and I like this podcast because I can just chat as long as you. And I thought, do you need like water or anything while you're there? I always tell people if you want to drink some water in the time when you're talking to me, because I think it goes.
No,
for so
long. I'm going to leave you and go take care of my husband. But then I'm going to call you off the record because we should just do this show weekly.
Okay. And you know what? And don't forget to tell Bob I had both of the knees done. So until he has both of them done, I'm not talking to him. Okay. I'm not talking to him until it's over.
I love you, babe.
I love you, too. Awesome. Thank you so much. You've been great.
I know you do.
See you, babe.
Bye, love. Thanks.
Hey, you know what? I love talking with Leslie. I haven't talked to her in a long time. We talk a lot on email all the time, and sometimes I'll send her a text. But I have to tell you, I must have been, I swear to God, I was working in radio, and I was kind of interning at WRKO in Boston. That's how long ago it was. And the guy that was there, bless his little heart, he would make me do things that I didn't realize, understand that it's really what I should have done. And at one time he sent me to this, to the Boston Garden, with some kind of women's kind of tennis thing. And I didn't know anything, but all I know is I got there and I sat next to Leslie Visser and I thought to myself, well, she's writing for the Globe. I'm hanging out with her. And so that's how we became friends. I swear to God. And so that's how we became friends. And we would always cross each other at Super Bowl and at, you know, things like the Final Four. We would always see each other then and there. And so I have been friends with her for such a long time. And it's been kind of good because I remember that time when I said, I don't know anybody, but Leslie Visser writes in the Globe and I'm going to be standing next to her the whole time. And that's how I ended up doing it. I happen to be the fabulous sports babe. Did you enjoy it? I did.
If you know the babe at all, you know this show never ends. Don't believe me, just watch. Follow her on Twitter at Real Sports Babe and subscribe to the show on iTunes. This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Hey, sports fans, this is Rich Scherer. Make sure to tune in to my brand new podcast. It's called Off the Air. We sit down with the biggest names in sports broadcasting, the guys that bring you all the big plays. We're going to turn the microphone off and get to know them off the air. It's Off the Air with Rich Scherer. Don't forget, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com is our home on the World Wide Web. So make sure to tell all your friends about Off the Air with Rich Scherer, a weekly podcast featuring the biggest names in broadcasting.